The next session will be asking your opinions to talk in depth about your views on the emerging priorities. But before we do that, just an opportunity really to ask questions either to Mike about what you've just heard in his presentation or to Helen in terms of the regional context and how all this links up. So does anyone have any questions or comments on what they've heard thus far? Yes, at the back.
Hello, I'm the regional director of Cranwell, King's Edward. I've no doubt that much of the negative effects of climate change are as described today. But one of the things that I'm quite interested in now is what are the effects in the East Midlands going to be of perhaps even more compelling than the climate change crisis of rising energy prices. How much research has been done on that? Because that could have, we know now that that gas is much more short supply. Oil prices, we now approach peak oil. So, in the short term, there may be, they're both linked. In other words, it's a double whammy, if you like, in terms of incentives of dealing with climate change. But I suspect that we are going to see, cost of fuel rising significantly over the next 10 years or so. And it may be that many people are more negatively affected by that in the next 10 years than they are by impact of climate change. I just wonder what research anyone in the room is aware of, or whether that features at all in today's discussion.
It's certainly been flagged up more than once as we've gone through this last few days as an important kind of parallel issue that we must take account of. So clearly it needs to be referenced, and I think it does add some extra weight to the need to do stuff, particularly around energy supply and demand. I'm not sure that we've commissioned any specific additional research into that regionally, but I'm sure there are people here around who can answer whether that is the case elsewhere.
Both Brian and I sit on a group at the university for the fuel depletion study group, and we've been looking at potential, but which has been explored elsewhere, actually in Liverpool University, for doing a fuel depletion impact study. I've already broached the issue at the West Central Partnership, see if we can take that further. And the point that was made at the Business Federation of Growth SAC is that needs to be taken to EMDA, because it is a regional issue, it's not just simply the Nottingham. We need to look at it on a wider.
And are your initial findings
suggesting
that it has quite a significant impact?
Well, certainly, yes, definitely. I mean, the impacts are not always obvious either. I mean, it's not just your gas and your electricity and your petrol prices. It may be your sphere of influence of your business, where your customers can come from, to your business, for example. The cost of your resources, your food supply, because oil prices are significant effect on food prices. There's a lot of detail going into that. But, maybe Brian can answer that question.
Well, I'd flag up that there is a meeting on January the 8th on the university. You want to come to that? About how vulnerable is your business organisation to oil price rises? And people coming along to that and preparing their organisation to a rising oil price are going to be preparing their organisation against climate change mitigation, because it's all about saving energy. And the other thing I'd say is that there is a beginnings of a transition town Nottingham group. Which people know has mainly emerged around the country as a response to peak oil, but they also include take on board climate change issues. So what I think we would hope is that the public authorities find ways to work collaboratively with the transition and not in
the It is key to remember that both those issues are keenly interlinked, but they don't actually, one doesn't solve the other. It's this very this also a full sense that the oil and gas ran out, and the climate change did as well.
Helen, would you like to go?
Yeah, just to add an extra thing, I don't think, I'm not aware of anything that EFTA have done in terms of risk to business, but I'm sure that's something they've got on their agenda. But one thing that we have flagged up is the affordable warmth issue. We have got a regional affordable warmth action plan, and we've been working towards that, and we do recognise, and to some extent I think this is actually dropped off the government's agenda to a certain extent. I think they're hoping that fuel poverty will be a thing that will pass in 2016, as they've written in their white paper. But we're really recognising that more and more people are actually going back into fuel poverty because of the price rises. One of the things that certainly we're starting to look at now is it's starting to become a bit more economically viable for biomass district heating and things. But I think it's really important actually that we lobby the government to make sure that heat and affordable warmth stays on the agenda, because heat has a lot of value at the moment, and we're still putting in place new power stations. There's a planning application for a straw burning power station in Lincolnshire with no heat recovery on it at all, because heat has no value, and that's not something that we can influence at a regional level, but it's something that we can continue to take back to government to say, this is ridiculous, that in this situation when you know that you're starting to have to think much more carefully about how much you can afford to spend on fuel, that you're just throwing loads of heat back into the atmosphere. So the startings of that, but I think there isn't an integrated approach to it yet in terms of business. Certainly the affordable warmth is quite a lot.
Thank you. There's a comment at the back.
Yeah,
and
perhaps not into the discussion at the moment, but I take that the point you're making, but I think the increase in prices will perhaps help us reduce CO2, may well do, but it won't change the fact that the climate is changing, and that we have to tackle the adaptation issues, which are probably coming way to the fore now. In previous years, I think we just put our efforts into reducing CO2, but having seen the floods, last year's incredible temperatures, April's record temperatures, I think we're now beginning to see that adaptation is probably a damn sight more high on the agenda than it ever was. One thing I did want to ask Mike was we have mentioned this issue of exporting our CO2 production by buying things in from China, etc. Have you got any comments as to how we can include that in any action planning we might devise?
Well, I do think it's quite important that we bear in mind the kind of ecological footprint approach to things. I mean, I think the problem with it is that there's a lot of assumptions built into it, and therefore the figures that you get at the end might be able to be challenged. So there are some problems in that kind of approach, but it does, it's very helpful in reminding people of the true scope of our impact rather than just stuff that is attributable directly to what happens here on the ground.
I think as well, the other thing is it's a big part of the communication issue, because one of the things that people say when you go around and you say we must do something about climate change, they say, well, it's open to us doing it until China starts to do something. But if we can continue to tell people, actually China's emissions would be nowhere near as big as they are if they were only producing for their own market. It's because they're producing for our market, for other European countries, for America. So there really are emissions, and if people understand that, then maybe we'll start to understand that actually, what we do has more impact than we maybe think in terms of our own, local impact.
So,
comment
on that. Could you introduce your name and your
organisation,
please?
I'm John Pontevis. I'm part of the public health team here in Government Office, part of the because we've got these emerging crises that are on the screen at the moment, it just makes me think we've got these emerging priorities, and to an extent, they do seem a bit like mother with an apple pie, because they don't actually say what it is that they're intended to achieve, and that to me seems to be $1 million question. Are they intended to achieve a 90% reduction in the region's emissions of CO2 by such and such a date? And if so, what are the political and social ramifications that lie behind that sort of target? Because otherwise, these are priorities, but how do we measure whether we've achieved anything against them? And if we have achieved anything against them, does it make a difference? I'm just a bit concerned that we haven't got any of that. There's nothing I've heard for the time we can switch to the executive.
So that's a valid point. I should say the next exercise after this Q&A is to talk about the emerging priorities in detail and to get your views. So we will be doing that. But Mike, did you want to respond in the interim, or are you happy for us to talk about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll continue with that. I just, you know, this is why we're asking the question, is to say to people, what do you think the region should be seeking to achieve in terms of targets? What's realistic? What are people willing to sign up for?
Thank you. I know there's a lot of people who want to ask questions, which is great to see. As I said, the next session we'll be talking about what these priorities should mean, could mean. So if I could ask you to confine your questions or comments more to sort of the presentation side for the sake of timing, and then that will give you more time to debate these priorities in the next session. I saw some other hands up. Yes, Phil.
You said something about the regional bodies sort of so far not being asked for regions to hold by government to set targets, but we're sort of entering into discussions about local area agreements, and DEFRA has sort of been provided with some indicative sort of targets. I can't remember if it is sometimes 11-13% saving by 2010, and then so you know, so at a local level, some work being done to sort of give some indicative targets. It would certainly help us if the region or the regional bodies were doing something in parallel, because. Mm-hmm. Obviously, at a local level, we can sign up to a target, but I guess if regional, like regional transport policy, regional economic development policy is not going in the same direction, you know, we're set up to fail against organisations that have almost been let off the hook by not being included in that sort of parallel process. So it seems to me we really need to get that happening at both local and regional level.
Okay, that's
what that's
point. Helen, did you
want to respond to that? No, I'll just say that absolutely that's, you know, valid. I mean, obviously we're in, I don't know if everyone knows, but we're in a bit of a kind of fluid area in the regional arena, because over the next 3 years or so, the plans are that the regional assemblies in their current form will cease to exist, and that the planning commission will go over to development agency. So obviously setting targets, you know, we're in a slightly unusual situation, but I think as part of the new
targets.
but I think there is the commitment to, you know, to drive forward. So I think as part of this whole programme we'll be looking to actually end up with some targets that all three bodies will sign up to. And that, you know, something will set that, and they will be robust and will carry on beyond the kind of reorganisation of the sun.
So that bit more confidence locally for the very agreements.
Thank you.
Just a quickie, in the document itself, that you didn't have the flood maps on the coastline that you had in there. And I wonder if in the eventual document you're going to have a map that shows that Boston and Lincolnshire are not the end of the water body in the
center. Yes, I think we do need to go into a bit more detail. I think remembering your earlier comment about not mentioning anything about the uncertainty around sea level rise due to major melting of the Antarctic and Arctic ice sheets. So yes, I think it's helpful to put that stuff in, just to kind of demonstrate some of the, you know, the potential consequences that go beyond some of the scientific certainties and uncertainties.
Just out of curiosity, did that come up in the discussion in meetings?
Yeah, there's people. But I mean, interestingly, because Lincolnshire has always been a flood affected area, because that's the whole reason why it's there, I don't think the discussion is quite the same as it might be in other parts of the country, because, you know, they used to be independent, so it's kind of how much more, how long are we continuing to be independent? So there's an interesting debate.
Thank you.
Got time for one or two more questions. Anyone else? Yes, at the back.
Given that, Emma is, should we say, on the way out,
Doesn't this give you an opportunity to make this document a lot more radical and demanding of government than it would otherwise be?
I don't think it's been on that way. I'd stop making it radical. I mean, in some way, but I think that's one of the things that, as you know, these events have been going on and various people have spoken, people want to see something that's really, really ambitious out of this programme of action. And that, you know, I think that's what we'd be aiming for. I mean, obviously, you do, as well as it being driven by the most interested parties, it also has to make sure that we've got ways that we can definitely bring the other people with us. Because if local authorities go, help leather and put businesses going, then we're not going to have a really good thing. So it's important that we talk to all the stakeholders. But I think everybody wants us to be a very ambitious
thing. Yeah, which is really, really encouraging, but also immensely challenging in how you manage to frame it so that everybody can sign up to it. I think the power, this is not a statutory document by any means, so it doesn't have the same kind of teeth as the regional spatial strategy. But I think the power, if there is some power to be had in it, is the degree of sign-up by all the kind of organisations that are represented around here.
Just very quick point. It was just, if you're trying to get businesses to sign up to it, the integration of the fuel depletion impact stuff into this equation makes it a lot easier to sell the economics of action.
Mm-hmm. Right, if I may, sorry, one last, very last question.
I think it relates to what Pete was saying. We asked an architects conference a few weeks ago, and Jonathan Porritt was speaking, and was basically telling the conference the leaders in our society aren't actually leading in a way that's going to make a difference to reducing climate change. We've got to do it ourselves. So I was, in a sense, it's reiterating what Pete's saying, can the leadership here actually, really help us to make things really lead in this sense and really help to make a difference? I think there's a big tension between it's like the necessity to do something very quickly, like Jerome was saying at the beginning, and the way the machine moves, and I think probably everybody in this room is aware of that. It's very difficult to change things quickly, and yet we need to change things quickly in order to make a real difference.
Mm-hmm. Any quick comments?
It's the same sort of issue that's come up several times. It's about the importance of both communication and trying to make sure that we've got some much clearer, more consistent, sharper messages that can be delivered at a regional, national and local level, and also the importance of finding ways to engage with a whole manner of different kinds of art audiences and communities to make it real for them, because at the moment the language is really unhelpful. Mitigation and adaptation are horrible sounding terms, aren't they? Enough to turn anybody off. So if you're starting off on that premise, you're never going to get very far. But I mean, we are making progress with things like the Everybody's Talking campaign. It's a good attempt at how to get that sort of thing better.
Thank you. Right, we're now on to really trying to get your views on it. As I said, I know you've got lots of things to say. Before I ask Helen and Mike to join some of the tables, could I just ask each table to introduce yourself in turn, just your name and organisation, so we get an understanding of who's here and who you're sitting next to. Can I start at this table?
Head of the list, but Nigel Lothrop, Helholt Wood, Chair of SEAM, Consultant with Jake Walter, and Chair of the Environmental Group on North Kesteven District Council.
Mm-hmm. I'm Chris Jackson, I'm part of the Office of the Nothing to Do with Jackson Group.
Of course, I'm in the Community Environment Service for Shrewsbury Council.
Hello, I'm Jane Bird, I'm a local police volunteer. Jonathan Rock's going to the ground with Greg Matthews.
Alan Miller, Chief Executive at Ashford District Council.
Marcus Ward, Health Improvement and Sustainability Coordinator, Ashford District Council.
Ian Openshaw, Chesterfield Borough Council, Lead Member of Environment and Sustainability.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dennis Berry, I'm the current policy officer.
Robert Cran, Chief Executive at
rural community action, Nottinghamshire, and chair of the Agenda 21 scheme.
Paul Tambler, Chief for Sustainability, local energy efficiency and renewable consultants and installers.
Warren Davis, Project Officer, Information Systems.
Peter Jagger, I'm working with Sustainability Team for Nottinghamshire County Council, and I'm also set on the Regional Energy Officer Group.
John Green, I have my own facilitation services company, I'm a biologist and I'm Ryan Davey, freelance ecological economist, and a member of an organisation called FASTA, which is a gateway. It's a foundation for sustainable economics. It's based in Dublin. It's got UK members on it.
Joe Bradley, the Sustainable Energy Development Officer, and obviously the Energy Partnership.
Still keen to meet with the council.
I'm Alan Lodge, freelance journalist in the Communities and Environment.
Lovely. Jeremy, I'm here from the East Coast. Lovely.